the trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that mighty sea is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, mighty sea will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
Alrighty, folks. Just when you thought those Mighty Seek had disappeared, here I am again. Sorry it's been so long since the last show. I've, there's always things going on. I guess it seems like all of us are always busy and not making enough time for our podcast. But here it is, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to sit down and try to record. Because every time I try to record during the day, it just doesn't seem to happen. Anyway, lots been going on. I did this presentation about a month ago now at a security conference. And so I had the slideshow and I had intended to do this podcast right after the presentation, but that just never seemed to happen. So I'm going to try to take care of this now. The presentation is about, building security into the software development lifecycle. There's going to be the presentation in Flash format on the Mighty Seek website, so you can kind of follow along with some actual text, which may be helpful, especially because a couple things I may reference the actual text, and you won't really get the jokes unless there's a point of some funny slides that you'll miss out on in just a pure audio format. So, anyway, let's get on with the presentation. With each mistake, there must surely be learning. Software development lifecycle and building security into. Let's start off with a bit of common ground. There's been a massive hookup of databases with confidential data to the internet in the last decade. This is a new phenomenon of giving it data to basically the public at large. This has only been possible since the internet, and so this last decade has just been a massive growth. The development groups have not really planned for the potential security problems that this really causes. The result is typically thousands of vulnerabilities across enterprises that expose data, and data that they may not want to get out. The cost of finding and fixing the problems once the software leaves development is exponentially higher than proper planning and execution. So if you've done it after the fact, it's much more expensive. And the hackers are getting more sophisticated and script kiddies more dangerous. There's so many attacks out there that are just scripted up that it's their impact is much more significant. There's also no vendor patch to turn to. As opposed to operating system problems where you'll go and download a patch from Microsoft or the Linux distro of your choice would have a patch. It could be software. You get an update from the vendor. But in web applications, since they're generally custom developed, there is no vendor. You have to deal with this yourself. There's also new laws, and large dollar amounts are making this important at all levels of business. So the enterprises need to rethink the development process and add security in as a core component. And this will dramatically improve the security posture. There's the business impact. There's tons of business impacts that could be involved. There's access to unauthorized data, which can lead to serious problems. Loss of important trade secrets, such as source code, customer lists and data, and a loss of customer trust. There could be access to private customer data, which could have legal ramifications, such as credit card information, any kind of private information, medical records. There's legal issues involved. Data loss can be a disruption of normal business. You know, and you know, if you don't have backups available, if you have any active data loss, may cause confusion and embarrassment. So, you know, customers go to the site and their data's missing. It could cause some distress, loss of customer trust and business, really. So what I want to try to get out is that security cannot be an afterthought, because traditional penetration and patch is a nightmare that really doesn't work. A formal approach is really required. It is essential. Software without security designed in will eventually become unmaintainable and too costly. Traditional security problems have been at the network system layers and are quickly become what are considered known vulnerabilities. Due to the limited number of platforms and versions, it's manageable. Okay, so traditional security issues have, like I said, that you can go to a vendor. You know, there's only a certain number of platforms and services out there. So attacks are generally what we'd call known vulns. People build databases of known attacks, and then you run tools to test these things. Well, web application vulnerabilities are generally unknown vulns. The application is custom, and the vulnerabilities become custom. And there's no vendor to get a patch from. So the type of attacks that you're going to deal with in a web environment, I'll break them down here. So the server vulnerabilities are generally around the operating system. So operating system vulnerabilities, viruses, worms, whatever. The core services, such as email services, web services, those will have vulnerabilities. The file sharing service, whatever, they'll have vulnerabilities. There'll be problems with default settings, and backup files could cause some problems. So if you've got a misconfigured web server, that could, you know, leak out information or, you know, source code or whatever. So there's a bunch of server level vulnerabilities that will impact the general security of a web application. These are generally easily solved. A simple, you know, installation of a vendor patch or hardening procedures will generally solve the problem. So server attacks are pretty clear. The next major type are application attacks. This would be something along the lines of invalidated input, broken access controls, broken authentication and session management, cross-site scripting, SQL injection, buffer overflows, improper error handling, so it's spitting out more information than you want. That could also kind of be considered a server problem, a server level problem. Insecure configuration of the app itself, and there can be denial of service attacks. So you've got some scripts that take, you know, a long time to process, and if somebody just keeps pinging them and kicking off that process, you know, basically you've used up all the resources on the server. These are a bit more difficult because the solutions have to be developed and tested internally. So these take a bit more effort. They're much more difficult to deal with. The other type of attacks would be what we'd consider the database class of attacks. These are going to be attacks against the SQL service ports. These would be SQL injection, which they also apply to the application, but they have a dual role. With SQL injection, you can often gain access to unauthorized data, destroy or modify existing data. There's also what are considered blind SQL injection attacks, and I'll try to explain that a little bit down the road here. But it's just another method, and it's a method of basically detecting if you can do SQL injection without seeing an actual error, which is usually what you would rely on. So now comes into play the SDLC, the Software Development Lifecycle. This is a buzzword that means many things to many different people. It encompasses all the steps that an organization follows when it develops software tools or applications. Security must be included at each stage of the process, and this includes many players, and it breaks the process into stages. Okay. The major players involved. We'll break down each of these here. Each of these different things that I just mentioned. The players and the stages. Okay. The major players are the business customer first. They're going to generally, and I'll go into each of these and what they their impact is. So we'll say the business customer, development, database administrators, QA, the security team, and the server administrators, the IT department. Okay, so let's take a look at the business customer. The business customer generally sets the requirements. Their focus is going to be on functionality. They rarely will ever consider security, and they generally demand quick turnaround. They always need it yesterday. They're always coming to you after they've needed it for a long time, you being the development side of things. They do not often appreciate the difference between having a well-designed solution and a quick hack to solve the problem or the need. Then you got the developers. Developers rarely have strong security experience or training. That is generally because web application developers tend to fall in one of these two major categories. Some of them are converts from in-house development of GUI or mainframe style applications, and they'll have great development skills, but they're not really used to the wild, wild west lifestyle of the internet. Okay, I mean, they're used to in-house development where they can actually, you can control the users a little bit more. Users are less likely to attack the system when they know they can get fired. Okay, when there can actually be action taken against them. Whereas on the internet, you know, you could have some hacker in Romania that you're going to have no way to ever impact. They can be attacking your site. So they're not used to that concept. And they're not always conversing, you know, they're just getting up on web technologies, much less web security problems. Then the next major group are new developers. These are the developers who are learning in the third generation level. So they're learning in these modern programming languages. Not that the programming languages are bad, they're great, but there's something that you've missed when you haven't learned the earlier programming languages, the lower level programming languages. They're not usually experienced at engineering applications. There's a big difference between coding an application and engineering it. Engineering requires a design process to really understand the global problem and how everything's going to work together and build a framework so that there's a clean interaction between all parts and a clean control. It's a much more difficult science, I suppose. They're also not familiar with these third generation new developers. Are not familiar with issues such as encoding types and memory management. And this comes into play when hackers start throwing things at them that they're not expecting. They don't usually understand what's happening in the lower levels to understand what they need to be protecting themselves against. Then we have the database administrators. Okay, that's the next player. They generally grant access to the database and the tables within. The database administrators understand the data and the databases. They understand SQL language and stored procedures. Unfortunately, they're generally cut out of the picture once development starts. The developers generally build their own SQL scripts within the web application, and the database server just gives them all rights to do so. This is going to be a problem, which I'll go into a little bit later here. The next major player is the QA team. Their primary focus is on functionality. They're generally testing, you know, if you click on this, or if I fill in this value, or if I forget to fill in this value. So their general focus is going to be on the functionality of the application. They don't often have the tools or know how to test security issues. So by the time QA gets involved, it's often too late. The next major player are the security teams. Security teams are generally part of the network group. They have very little influence or interaction with development teams. And if they're brought into the development process at all, it's usually during the QA process, which, as I mentioned, is often too late. Then you have the server administrator. They're going to be the ones responsible for maintaining the servers They're going to be responsible for many of the known attacks, such as the attacks against the operating system, core services, you know, such as the web server, or attacks against default installed CGI scripts. The server administrator is going to be handling those issues. They know little or nothing about unknown attacks. Okay? They don't understand how those, you know, the web application is just a, you know, mystery to them. They just know they have to make it run. They're also the first man on the scene when an attack takes place. And since they unfortunately do not have a lot of interaction with the development team, you see where the problem is. You know, they're the first one there, but they don't know who to contact. So they're, you know, first man on the team doesn't know what to do. So let's go back and let's break this down into stages. The software development lifecycle can be broken down in many ways. Okay, I've seen it broken down into 24 stages. So there, it's been broken down in a ton of different ways. I like to look at it in four major stages. Okay, so at the highest level, and within each of these, you have sub levels. But the four major stages that I generally look at are the planning stage, the development stage, the implementation stage, and the maintenance. So I'm going to go into each of these. One thing to understand is that the life cycle is going to happen whether you plan it out or not. It doesn't matter if you plan it, it's just going to happen. You're going to have some level of planning, you're going to have some development, you're going to have some implementation, and you're going to be maintaining this thing. So it's going to happen. So without a plan, the cycle can be costly, painful, and will generally be filled with security problems. A solid and well-considered plan can generate more robust and secure software. So this is where my little joke comes into play. What we have here is an illustration of how the customer explained it. And it's a kind of a rope ladder kind of thing, hanging from a tree like where a swing would be, but it's got multiple slats. And then it's got an image of how the project leader understood it. And it's completely different. Then you have how the analyst designed it, which again is missing a bunch of parts. And then how the programmer write it is flat. How the business consultant described it, it's this luxury sofa chair. And how the project was documented, which is nothing. Was completely undocumented. And then you got a what operations installed, which is just a rope hanging from a tree. How the customer was billed for a big roller coaster. How it was supported was a cutoff tree. And what the customer really needed was a tire swing. So it's a silly little illustration, but if you've ever dealt with software development, it's hilarious. It is so right on. It is perfect. I got this actually from scaryideas.com. So Scary Ideas has a lot of great shirts and cups and mugs, and they've really got some funny stuff there. Anyway, SDLC, let's break down the stages. First one I call lack of planning. The conceptual definition. The user determines that the software is needed to handle a business task. Functional requirements and specifications. The user defines what functionality the software must include. Okay, they're really kind of just telling you what it has to do here. Too often, this stage is too brief, or in worst case, completely verbal. They just come and describe it. Rarely includes discussion of security. And does the organization even have a formal security policy to follow? Yeah, that's just a mess. Having some proper planning, you have the conceptual definition. So the user determines the software is needed to handle a business task. The functional requirements are done. And then there's technical specifications. This is where you start. This is what was missing, or usually missing. And that's a detailed description of the technical requirements and specifications. There's a definition of small discrete components or objects for each task. The architecture is laid out, what platform and technologies will be used. The development process is going to be chosen. I don't care what it is. Just pick one and use it. It could be the classic model where developers are given tasks and work largely independently. And it should include some peer review. Then there's the agile methods such as extreme programming, pragmatic programming, Scrum, Crystal, Lean. There's a bunch of different processes that are out there. Extreme programming is, you know, hip one day and horrible the next. They're all, you know, classic styles, not going to hold up, whatever. Whatever your development process is and however you're comfortable managing the process, if you've got a good management and a good plan, it's going to work. So I'm kind of agnostic toward that. I generally tend to use the classic model. Whatever it is, pick it and go with it. Then you have the project management. And without good project management, the software is going to go off course. So you need to make sure that the schedule is realistic, and it also provides for the QA process. Often that gets left out. It's just a matter of when development can be done, but you don't want to go through the whole QA back and forth. Proper planning also includes security issues. Organizational standards and policies need to be put into play. You need to look at the legislation that's out there. The Sarbanes-Oxley, often known as SOX, which affects everybody. Gramm-Leach-Bliley, which affects financial institutions. HIPAA, which affects medical. COPPA and FISMA, which is child protection. CAN spam for spam and marketing. And then you have the credit card processing rules. So MasterCard and Visa have a set of rules about what you have to do if you're taking credit cards. All these things need to be factored into your plan, and you got to make sure that you account for these things. Otherwise, you can have legal issues down the road if you do become vulnerable and something was in the recommendations or requirements that you didn't follow on. So you got to, you know, look at these things. I know it seems a bit overwhelming, but you focus on what affects you. You know, SOX affects pretty much everybody, so you'd want to look at that and what the rules are there. Then you have to deal with the security issues of whatever platform and technologies are going to be used. So if you're going to be using Windows, you got to understand the security issues. If you're using Linux, same thing. Depending on what web server, you got to be looking at what the security issues, what the lockdown methods are. Database structures are really important. Permissions around the database structures and all that kind of stuff. It's all got to be planned out. Input validation is the most common problem and the one that'll be the hardest to go back and fix. So that needs to be in there. That's my, you know, that's my favorite topic, it seems. I always want to be talking about input validation because it really matters. This is where most people drop the ball and where most of the security problems come into play. Okay, so that was the planning stage. Now, the development stage, if I haven't lost you yet. Hopefully you're using the slides and you're following along. If you're listening to this on your iPod or other MP3 player, I'm sorry if I'm going too fast, but for those following along with the slideshow, hopefully you're keeping along and it's being helpful here. Anyway, okay, so we're going to talk about the messy development. This is where it's not being done right. The developers take requirements and start coding. Specifications? What specifications? Security handled differently by each developer. There's no centralized solution. This stage can be a complete and utter mess. And it often is, most of the time it seems. At least in terms of security. Maybe the product gets out there, but security is a nightmare. So in a proper stage of having a planned out SDLC, the development part is stick to the specifications. Deviating from the specs should be avoided. Change the specs and get approval by all parties if there is a need for such a thing. So if, you know, along the way you guys figure out you can't do this, you have to do that, then go back and get it signed off on by the party so there's no surprises at the end, because they're going to freak out. Customers are going to freak out if you haven't told them that there's an issue. You know, maybe you get halfway into some functionality and you realize this is going to take twice as long as we thought, so it's going to mess up our deadlines. or we just can't see how we're going to do it at all, go back and tell a customer. Get the specs updated. There shouldn't be any surprises at the end. This should all be handled. There needs to be some flow up and down the SDLC. So make full use of the chosen development model. As I said, you know, there's a bunch of different choices. Whatever it is, make full use out of it. If you're going to do any of the agile development methods, use them. Go for it. Do it. Whatever you're going to do, do it all the way. Make it work. You really need to engineer the application. So this is designing it. This is really functionalizing, objectifying, engineer the application. It'll be easier to maintain and it's much easier to secure. There needs to be peer review. Even if you're using classical developments, you still need to avoid... What happens a lot is you'll have individual code territorial issues. So a developer will code up his thing and he kind of doesn't want anybody else messing with it because he would put a lot of thought into it. And you want to respect that. You want there to be some level of ownership, people to take pride in their work. But it can't be at the cost of the business, because a developer may change jobs at some point, and if nobody else understands this code, it's a problem. Also, the developer, you get into a mindset and you look at an issue one way. A new developer can come in and suggest something that really improves the performance or cleans up the code by a single little thing that he experienced at some point. So peer review is important. You want to build security in from the ground level. So this may require some security training for the developers if they haven't already had such, which is usually the case. You need to make use of security best practices. You have to have standardized and centralized input validation. Bing, bing, bing. My favorite topic. There needs to be this concept, and I go into this a lot, is this deny all and allow as necessary. It's very common in the network world. Firewalls all work that way. It's a least and necessary privileges structure. I promote it constantly. And I am pretty sure I have other podcasts on it, or if not, I'll do some. You need to protect your database. Avoid having the web application generate all of the SQL statements. Figure out where you can use stored procedures. Anytime there's any kind of input or updates to data, it's usually best to have it done through a stored procedure so that you're protecting yourself from the... If a web application gets hacked and it's doing the SQL statements itself and not using stored procedures, then as soon as the web application's attacked and vulnerable in some way, then an attacker can do anything they want to the database. What's usually best is there's a lot of control that a database administrator has over a database. So what's best to do is to have the web application's account read only to the tables. And you might even want to limit that, but that's a good start. Start off it being read only. And then use stored procedures for any inserts or updates. And give access to the web application account to execute those stored procedures. So you want to protect your database. You want to follow general development best practices, which will improve security. And you want to have a strong authentication and session management design in place. Let me talk a little bit more about the deny all and allow as necessary. I don't want to skim over this. Deny all, allow as necessary is not just for the network layer. Okay, we're used to that in firewalls. When firewalls first came along, people didn't understand that. They thought it was a frustrating hassle. I mean, it is. People fought it, but now everybody gets it because there's vulnerabilities that would pop up, and it was because people were starting off with allow everything and then deny as necessary, and that was a mess. So the network side of the world's gotten that. They've learned that lesson. But it hasn't been learned in the development process. You don't want to clean bad inputs. That's what too many people do. There are times where it's okay, but as a general rule, you don't want to clean bad inputs. You want to reject them. What you want to do is define the expected data and deny everything else. So if you say this needs to be a number value, then say only allow a number value in. Okay? If it needs to be a number value above zero, that's all you're going to allow. So you want to define your rules and deny anything else and let the chips fall where they may at that point. And this will protect you a lot. This will protect you from so many different attacks. If the input validation is implemented and forced, the security problems will be drastically reduced. I usually put it in the framework so that before developers even have access to it, they've had to define what data type they want, and then they get their data. If they don't define it, they don't get any data. By data, I'm talking about user input. As I said, you want to avoid SQL statement generation. You know, the web application developer and the SQL administrator should be working together. You don't want to, you know, I've gone over this and I got ahead of myself in the slide, but you just don't want to have the web application responsible for generating all the SQL statements. All right, the next stage, and this is kind of a subcategory of development, is the QA process. Testing cannot be an afterthought or something that can be cut back when the schedule gets tight. It's generally what happens. Okay, you start running low on time, QA time gets squeezed instead of bumping the whole schedule. You got to provide the QA team with the security training and tools. They need the training to understand security issues and tools to automate the security testing. You need to include the security teams into the QA process. Don't wait till the application is in production before doing an audit. You need performance testing to avoid, you know, simple DOS attacks. Performance testing will expose a number of performance improvements that you can make when you start seeing some heavy loads on a web app. And you could expose security problems in general. And you need to test the data migration. Usually there's some existing data structures and you're going to have to migrate them. They did a, you know, initial migration during development, but you got to make sure that that migration process is documented and works. All right, now the implementation stage. Involve security... this is kind of implementation in the QA stage, I guess. You need to involve the server administrator, the IT department, in the QA process. Too often, the development and QA environments do not exactly match the production environment. So, you know, developers have one set of settings because they want to debug. QA has another set. And production is the lockdown system. The systems will sometimes have additional patches and services. There could be a load balancing solution. There could be different settings on the error handling. All these things could affect the application. So you want to test that all during the QA process. Make sure that the QA and the server administrator's systems match. All right, now the actual implementation. You got to do the data conversion, the documentation, the training, and then the application deployment. This is the final stage of releasing the application, not the final stage of the application. The application will continue on. This is just you finally delivered something. So you need, but you do need, because the application is going to be used. Okay, this is just really the start of the application in many ways. So you need a feedback and support solution in place. You need to be able to handle user questions or, you know, bug reports or whatever. They got an error or it doesn't do something. You need to have a feedback and support solution in place right away. You need to have the developers and the QA teams on hand during this whole final stage, so they can address immediate issues. Then you get into the final stage, which is the maintenance. This is an ongoing process. You're going to be continuing support of the end users, bug fixing, security monitoring and auditing, and doing upgrades, adding features. Customers are never going to be happy. They're going to constantly want it to do more and more and more. So if you've done the whole first part of this SDLC, you followed the process, hopefully maintenance will be a lot easier. Or it should be. If you follow the process, it'll be a lot easier at this point. And your total cost of ownership, which is another buzzword I hate, but the total cost of ownership will definitely decrease. So if you do it right the first time, it'll generally take a little longer up front, it'll cost a little more up front, but it will meet the requirements and it will be more secure. It's more likely to going that it's actually going to be delivered on time. If you don't have these processes in place, you're much more likely to be delivering the software late. It'll be more maintainable, and it'll cost less over its lifetime. So let's do a quick review here. Security problems are becoming a serious bottom line issue. Web application vulnerabilities need to be addressed in new ways. Web application security must be integrated into the SDLC. If it's integrated into the SDLC, you can achieve secure software, or generally more secure software. Nothing's perfectly secure. If integrated into the SDLC, you can cut down on costs over the lifetime of the project. And that's it. With each mistake, there must surely be learning. And hopefully I've made enough mistakes and you guys can learn from them. This is Dan Kirkendall. I hope you enjoyed this presentation. And that'll be it for today.